Hello and welcome to Series 2 of the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Breast Cancer Care and Breast Cancer Now merged in 2019. We united to create one charity for everyone affected by breast cancer and are the UK's first comprehensive breast cancer charity. As of the 1st of October 2019, we are known as Breast Cancer Now, the charity that's steered by world-class research and powered by life-changing care. We're here for anyone affected by breast cancer the whole way through, providing support for today and hope for the future. The episode you're about to listen to was recorded before the merger, so some references might be out of date. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. In this episode, Claudia is joined by Karen Seeger, who's a psychotherapist, writer and podcast host based in London. Karen has been diagnosed with breast cancer twice, and today we'll be talking about how she dealt with her recurrence and how she supports other women with their mental health after a diagnosis.
Karen has been diagnosed with breast cancer twice, and today we'll be talking about how she dealt with her recurrence and how she supports other women with their mental health after a diagnosis. Karen, thank you for joining me today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Claudia.
Could you start by telling me how you decided to become a cancer counsellor?
Before I was diagnosed with breast cancer for the first time in 2012, I already worked as a psychotherapist in the NHS in London. And after my diagnosis, I realised just how little awareness there is in the medical profession and even in psychotherapy circles, based on my own experience, about the mental health needs for people who go through a cancer diagnosis and cancer treatment. And based on that and my personal experience and my previous treatment, I decided after I returned to work to spend more time working in that field and started to grow a private practice in that field and then started writing, and now I do radio programs about it as well.
Yeah, you're right. It's a lot of the women that we speak to aren't even told that breast cancer could affect their mental health, and it's definitely something that isn't communicated very well.
Yes, I think the focus, understandably so, is on the medical treatment, but the emotional and mental impact throughout the whole experience is vast, and it deserves support. It needs support.
Yeah. So having supported men and women in your counselling, how did you feel when you yourself were diagnosed with breast cancer?
When you do this type of work, every time you meet somebody and you hear personal stories, it affects you personally, and it can potentially re-trigger your own experiences, your own feelings. So it's something that is there all of the time. And we have to be very mindful of that and have to make sure that we are okay with that and that doesn't interfere with the work that we do and the support that we offer. So so it wasn't all of a sudden when I, for example, was re-diagnosed that the fact that I work in the field started to sort of become a lot more present for me. That was always present. I guess the difficult moments are when you support people who have a terminal diagnosis or when clients die. Mm. That then brings your own situation so much more to the foreground.
Yeah, I can imagine that brings up a lot for you.
Absolutely, exactly. Well, and again, we have to deal with that as therapists, and so perhaps through our own therapy, through our own support. And it's something that we have to reflect on. In my work, I'm very open about my own cancer experience. And as therapists, we are often encouraged to keep ourselves almost like a blank screen. I've decided to make sure that people are aware of it. So when I was re-diagnosed, obviously, I also had to share that piece of news with my clients, yeah, including those who are affected by cancer. And that was, in the work that I do, looking back at it, I think that was difficult, but it was really valuable, because when you do that and you don't shy away from the reality, so to speak, in a funny sort of a way, it can also encourage people in terms of how they handle their own stories, in terms of how they perhaps don't shy away from talking about difficult moments. And those conversations might have started off very difficult, but by the end of it, we were all quite relieved to have had the experience that we can talk about it.
Yeah, I guess your honesty must have inspired.
Absolutely,
their own.
Yes.
Well,
I think the worst thing you can do in this field is just disappear, and people get an email and you say, "I'm no longer there to help you." You know, this is dreadful. So I think we need to be consistent. The type of work that we do is really to help people live with those experiences, and almost like we have to model it.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
I can't behave different to the way I appear in the session with people who need support.
Yeah. And like you were saying earlier, when you're working with people who have cancer, obviously that brings up a lot for you, especially after your second diagnosis, and you've had to really come to terms with that and think through it. So
yes.
I wonder if that also, being able to see your resilience, has a huge, very powerful impact on the people that you're working with.
I think you're right. And I made sure first time and second time around that I took enough time off work to be ready to continue to do that type of work. Because, yes, you need to be resilient, you need to be strong, but you also need to be of use to the other person, who often also pays for your time. So it's in their interest, it's in my interest.
How did you feel when your treatment ended after your first diagnosis?
A total blank. There was a total blank. It was such a huge anticlimax. A, of no longer having the regular appointments. And while I was going through, I had surgery, chemotherapy and radiotherapy first time around. And I had a calendar on my wall, and I would literally tick off every day. So I wanted it to end, but when it did end, it didn't feel anything like what I had hoped it would feel like. It just felt very frightening, very empty, very unsupported. My body was catching up with itself. You know, you started to sort of, you had to develop a different daily routine because you no longer had appointments to go to. You had all the responsibility for your well-being resting on your own shoulders. So it was really coming out of a traumatic experience, and starting to catch up with life and with yourself, and gradually starting to think what you want to do next and how you're going to deal with this reality.
How did you manage that? How did you deal with it?
Very gradually. I dealt with it by giving myself as little stress as possible, as little responsibility as possible. I like being outdoors, so I started to spend as much time outdoors as my sort of energy allowed, and it started to rebuild over time. Through my own therapy, I went through an extremely angry period. That was very important for me. And then gradually thinking about what I wanted to do, because I had to start working again. I could no longer do the work that I was doing previously. I was self-employed. There was no role available for me, and it wasn't the right setting. I didn't want a 9-to-5 job. I wanted to have something where I can pace myself and where I can make choices about when and how long I work. So it was going down the self-employed route again and building up from scratch, which also included teaching myself new skills, teaching myself to design a website, teaching myself to use different computer programs. And that started to grow my self-confidence back, because I had lost a lot of self-confidence during that time as well.
Yeah, because I can imagine setting up your own business as well. That's a huge thing to take on.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely, exactly. Where do you start? How do you do it? It was also a financial risk.
Yeah.
And it took about a year for it to start working.
Did having that project, though, help you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it worked for me because it fits in with my personality style. And I think cancer experiences or any other traumatic experiences don't necessarily mean we lose that essence of who we are and the essence of what type of things work well for us. I was always like that. So for me, it was almost natural and a relief to make that decision. That's where I have to head. You know, that's what I need to do. To give myself permission to do that.
Mm.
To give myself that freedom to do that.
Yeah.
Rather than rushing in and checking job sites and knowing, oh, I don't actually want to go for interviews and I don't want to do this. No, I didn't even go there anymore.
Yeah. So almost gave you the space to reflect on actually what was the best thing for you.
Absolutely. Because I think everything now counts. We need to get this... not necessarily right. I mean, what is right? But I think when your body has been affected by something like that and perhaps continues to be affected by it, we live with cancer. We may live beyond cancer, whatever language you use. There is the risk. And I think it's important that we perhaps develop a lifestyle that takes that into consideration, where we feel we are in charge as much as we can.
Yeah.
You know, and where we can regulate stress levels and responsibilities as much as we can.
Mm. Yeah, I guess so much of it comes into self-care as well. We talk a lot about self-care.
Absolutely.
After treatment and
yes.
Making sure you know how to save your energy or how to focus on what is meaningful for you.
Yes, and we have to learn that.
Yeah.
Because while we talk about it, we can't tell people what it feels like for them. You actually need to feel that in your body. When do you reach a threshold? And I guess when we are perhaps younger and healthy, we burn the candle at both ends and we can just push, 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 and it will be all right. You know, we might just have a long weekend off. It's not necessarily like that anymore. So it's again about getting used to feeling our body and our physical and mental response to stress.
Yeah. After your first diagnosis, how did you feel about recurrence? It's something that so many women call our helpline about,
yes.
Is their fear of recurrence. How
yes.
much did you think about it?
I wasn't told very much about it when I, after my first treatment, I think I was given a leaflet. Things might have been mentioned in terms of what to watch out for. But spending a lot of time also because of my work on social media, I think that's where I learned a lot more.
The From red other flag, women's stories.
Yes, and the red flag signs. And for me personally, and everybody has to make that choice for them. For me, I decided that it would always be on the cards that the cancer can come back, to the great upset of my family and friends, who felt, you've done this, you've gone through a treatment, you are cured. Celebrate, be happy, be positive, live your life. And my attitude was always looked upon as being pessimistic. For me personally, it was a realistic attitude to have. Because of that, I was also a lot more in tune with my body and noticed changes. And which then, when you go to your GP, is sometimes called health anxiety. Oh, you're too worried about the cancer coming back. I called it being alert. There's a very fine dividing line. So I was prepared for it, which doesn't mean I thought it would happen.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to happen. So when it did happen, it was pretty upsetting. And it was like the first time, but worse, this feeling of utter disbelief. It's like a surreal experience like nothing else, where you just really take time to be able to even comprehend the vastness of this news.
Right.
And then the memories of what you've gone through before and thinking, oh, no, I don't want to go through that again. So whereas before, the first diagnosis, I mean, that was pretty bad, but I didn't really know what to expect, so I was quite naive about it, and that sometimes helps as well.
How did you feel after your treatment ended, then after your second round of treatment ended? Did you go through that same feeling of being blank, as you mentioned the first time, or was it different this time?
Well, I'm still going through treatment.
Yeah.
And we'll see how long that will last for. So I consider myself as living with cancer.
Mm.
And I need to make peace with that. And I need to find a way of living with that, which I have been doing for a year now. And for me personally, having that clarity in terms of where I stand, even though we don't know what's coming in the future, having made that decision in terms of this is how I look at it, actually that has helped me a lot. In a funny sort of a way, and I don't know how listeners feel about that, it has given me more control than when I didn't have the diagnosis. Of course, I have worries now,
yeah.
But in a way, they feel a lot more justified now than before.
Right. What do you think is, or what have you used over the past year to help you get to that point?
Constant reflection on it. So I spend a lot of time thinking about it without actually increasing my anxiety about it. It's really to create a sense of perspective about this, which perhaps is fairly easy for me at the moment because physically I do not feel too unwell. Perhaps there is an issue with unpredictable energy levels, so I have to be mindful of that. But it's really to make choices about how I want to handle my life going forward, which also includes how I want to handle my treatment, and make priorities about things that matter to me and don't do very much of the things that I no longer want to do. So it's making choices, and avoiding situations where I feel I have to defend myself, because you will always have, whatever you choose, there will always be somebody who disagrees with you.
Yeah.
There will always be somebody who unintentionally will pull you down. And this is also something that we need to be aware of. Sometimes we have to become very protective of our own way of looking at the world and avoid situations that can pull us down.
Yeah. So, I mean, for you, obviously, thinking about mental health has been something you've done for such a long time as a psychotherapist,
yes,
as a writer, and then for your own mental health and,
yes,
like you're just explaining, caring, making sure you care for yourself and put yourself first in those important times.
Yes.
And at Breast Cancer Care as well, we ran a campaign in 2018 called Care After Breast Cancer, which focused on the support that's needed once hospital-based treatment ends, as you've spoken about. And this campaign's research found that 84% of women with breast cancer are not told about the possibility of developing anxiety and depression by a healthcare professional. And like we spoke at the beginning, there's such a lack of communication, or can be. I mean, many people have good experiences, but a lot of people don't, around the fact that people can have psychological changes and that they do have things to process mentally and adjust to after a breast cancer diagnosis and treatment. But I think often with a lot of the women I've spoken to who've been on the podcast and the people our helpline speak to find that by giving women the right information and men the right information, then that can help them take more control and know what might be coming, or be able to, have a bit of knowledge around how to care for themselves as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And I wonder what you would say to someone who's recently finished treatment, hospital-based treatment, and might be struggling emotionally and might not know what's going on.
Yes.
And might be a bit confused about it.
Yes. And I think that not knowing of what's going on, that's really at the heart of it. Because to be struggling with it is normal. It's not because the person is doing something wrong or because there is something wrong with them. It stands to reason that we are left with difficult feelings. And it is a frightening time, and it remains a frightening time. There is a lot of grief going on for perhaps no longer be able to live the way we wanted to live. We can no longer do things that we want to do. People always think grief is because somebody has died. You can grieve for things you can no longer do or have. There may be frictions in the relationship. We may feel left down by people who we thought would support us. There are financial worries. There are worries about our self-confidence, insomnia, just feeling low. It is understandable, and I think that's really important to communicate to people in a way that they don't think, oh, here's another thing to worry about. Mm. Now it's my mental health. You don't want to do that. But really to say, don't worry if you feel like that.
Yeah.
It is natural, and there are things that you can do about it. And by realizing this will take a little while. We already take a lot of potential pressure off ourselves and perhaps other people around us. And equally, people around us need to understand that, because sometimes we don't want to worry families more, we just want to go back to normal.
Yeah.
And then we carry all of this inside and have no one to speak with. So finding support places, and there are many hospitals that offer counseling, a lot of charities that offer counseling, private counseling, there's a lot of forums available online.
Yeah.
To be able to talk about it.
Yeah, and share that experience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we run a course called Moving Forward, which is for that point once hospital-based treatment has ended. And often women say the greatest thing they get from it, although they're also getting a lot of really useful information, is just the fact that they've been in a room full of other women who know exactly how they feel.
Yes.
And they realise that those distressing emotions are a totally reasonable reaction to a life-threatening disease. It's a very normal reaction to have.
Yes.
In the same way as you mentioned with grief, we understand when we lose someone and when we grieve them, that we'll feel sad, that we'll feel distressed. And understanding that means that when it happens, you expect it and you aren't so scared of it. So I guess, if we can allow people to understand that is totally normal reaction for breast cancer, and also make sure people have that access to forums like our forum, to Moving Forward, to charities or hospitals that provide counselling, then that can be a real source of support.
Because the counselling is really intended, at least that's what I think it should do, is to have a place where you can process some of those experiences that you've had, but also then to develop some coping mechanisms, to have almost some tools up your sleeve to help yourself through those difficult times. So that when it happens, you've already have had a chance to think about it beforehand. How do I handle the fear of the recurrence? How do I handle it when I have a headache or have joint aches or pain in my back? Well, our first thought often is metastasis in the brain or in the bones. This is a constant thing, and it might be nothing like this. So there is a lot of reason to be anxious and to feel down about, but we have to find a way of living with that and living our lives in a way that continues to make sense and is satisfying.
Yeah. What are there any tips particular tips you would give people on managing their mental health? I guess at any point of breast cancer or for anyone in general.
I think you need to have purpose in your life. You need to do things that you enjoy. They don't need to be complicated. There need to be things that work for you. And sometimes we might no longer enjoy them. Then we can start looking for something else. I think looking after our mental health doesn't need to be a burden.
Mm.
It's part of our life. We look after our physical health. Why don't we look after our emotional health? And sometimes I like to use the word emotional health. If we feel we're going through a stressful time or some stressful days are coming our way, then perhaps we need to prepare for that, reduce stress elsewhere, and really allow ourselves enough time to recuperate from stressful times.
Yeah.
I don't come into London every day, so I've come into London to see you today. Mm. I wouldn't do it tomorrow.
No.
And I didn't do it yesterday.
That because, is a stressful situation.
Because I know it takes some energy.
Yeah.
So it's really managing those small things, and they do add up.
Yeah. That's interesting thinking about it in comparison to how we manage our physical health, actually, because with physical health, we're very used to thinking more proactively rather than reactively. So rather than waiting for our, I mean, some people might start if they feel they need to make a change to their sort of fitness or something. But in general, our attitude towards physical health is, oh, what can we do which is proactive, which is fun, which is positive? And you're right, with mental well-being, it should be the same. It doesn't need to be a burden. It can be something which where you're focusing on what brings you joy and what brings you energy. And yeah, that's an interesting way of thinking about it, actually.
I think you've just said something really important. It's meant to give us energy. And often we think, oh, mental health, we only talk about it when there is a problem.
Mm.
But it's there all the time.
Yeah.
Just as much as there's physical health. So find out what you need to do to get positive energy, you know, and this can be, I don't know, a walk in the morning to the tube station instead of taking the bus. Small things, they do add up. It doesn't need to be anything complicated. Listening to some nice music at home, have some pleasant background noise can also alleviate stress a lot. Diet is very important, you know. Be mindful how you use social media and screen time. We
yeah.
hear all about this at the moment. All those things are important. And if in doubt, speak to people.
Yeah.
We are not alone in this. And, you know, you're not alone in it. I'm not alone in it. We are alone in a way because it's a very personal, individual experience. But it is a shared experience on so many levels.
Yeah, absolutely. I wondered if there is something or someone that you feel helped you throughout both of your diagnoses.
Me? without sounding pompous, no, I think
no,
I had to do the hard work.
Mm.
I just had to find all this stuff myself. I remember I would just ask people and pick up all the leaflets I could and do all the, you know, reading. And sometimes I didn't want to read. I didn't want to know anymore. It was just hard going. Mm. But you continue to build up and you continue to think about it and you continue to pick up new things.
I think it's important to reflect and realise how much you have done as well. I don't think that is pompous at all.
Yes.
And like you're saying, well, what we've been talking about is focusing on your own self-care and your own mental health. So that's probably the best answer.
Yes. Really. And you know, I'm not the only one in this. If we look around in the cancer community, it's there might be moments when we think, well, you know, there is not much more left for us there, apart from perhaps waiting for the cancer to kill us, if I'm blunt. But it's really surprising the energy and the drive people can develop despite it,
mm.
or perhaps because of it.
Yeah.
You know, we human beings are phenomenal. So there is so much we all can do. And in our small ways or in our bigger ways, there is no competition. Everybody has to do what they feel they need to do.
Yeah, Absolutely. I think that's a really nice point to end on as well. Thank you so much for joining
us, Karen.
You're
very welcome. Thanks for having me.
You can listen to Karen's podcast, Cancer and You, on cancerandyou.podbean.com. You can follow her on Twitter at Karen Seeger and on Facebook at Karen Seeger Therapy Writing. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.